68, the go-show for every weekend, whether you're at home or traveling. I'm Brad Crandall. We pride ourselves on Molitor's variety. Take this half hour. We'll cover the biggest story in current poetry, then move on to the biggest story in sports. To be specific, poet, composer, performer Rod McEwen, publishing's bestseller bard, tells how it happened, 3 minutes from now. A bit later, another direct Olympic report from Grenoble, France. Molitor, unique, a weekend world all your own.
Close the door, light the light. We're staying home tonight, far away from the bustle and the bright city lights. Let them all fade away. Just leave us alone, and we'll live in a
Olympic brief. French artist Marcel Legros drew a startling likeness of gold medal winner Peggy Fleming of the United States, and she's a girl well known for her refreshing unconcern for image making. However, when Legros presented the painting to her at the practice rink, he got a kiss for his effort. When asked how old he was, Legros, who's in his late 60s, smiled and said, "I feel just 20 now." A 34-year-old pop composer turned poet has the publishing industry shook up pretty good. His first two volumes of free verse and song lyrics have sold about 250,000 hardcover copies to date. Now, that's not bad in a country where poetry, no matter whose, isn't even counted when the bestseller list is compiled. Despite the establishment, Rod McEwen's poetry is currently outselling the top fiction seller. And that's pretty good for a guy who dropped out of school when he was 11. McEwen tells Monitor about his background and his rise to fame during a recent chat in San Francisco.
Rod, it's kind of hard to determine where this started. You're a multi-threat. You're doing everything. You're singing and you're appearing in nightclubs and you're writing songs and you're doing a lot of other things, you have become one of the most popular poets in the history of poetry, I guess. Where did all this start anyway? What did you do first?
Well, I really started off as a radio disc jockey in Oakland, California. And from there, went into the Army, began singing. Came back in 1955 to San Francisco, and Phyllis Diller, who used to write commercials for me at the radio station I was at, was appearing, getting her start at the Purple Onion, and talked me into coming over and auditioning, and she got me my first job as a singer. And from there, I went down to Los Angeles. I went into contract to Universal, making a series of films that were commercially successful but artistically junk. And I didn't like that very much.
Were you a singer in the movies? Or just
no, I was a kind of an actor. You know, I was sort of... In fact, I made so many movies with John Saxon, I was beginning to think we were engaged. So I was always kind of... I was becoming the oldest teenager in Hollywood, really. And I went away from that.
Do you have a formal background?
Not really. I was sort of self-taught. I had very little background, period. I mean, as far as education goes, I spent a total of perhaps 6 years in school, all told, because I dropped out of school when I was 11. And from the time I was 11 to 15, I didn't go to school at all. And then when I was 15, I went back into school where I should have been without telling them I hadn't had any schooling. So I then dropped out of my junior year. And as a result, I end up being a guy who still can't do his multiplication tables. And 2 years ago, I still spelt very with two R's. So to find myself... with a couple of best-selling books is kind of amazing to me, really.
This is your second volume of poetry, right?
Listen to the Warm, right?
Listen to the Warm. The first one was Stanyan Street and Other...
Sorrows,
right, which I have. I'm glad to have a copy of this now. And the sales have been incredible.
They really have, but unfortunately, bestseller lists don't report books of poetry.
Why don't they?
I don't know. I think
they
think
against of them poetry
as being,
or something?
Well, I think they sort of think of them as being non-books.
No, I don't know why,
but I was telling my editor at Random House, you know, it kind of hurts in a way. You know, you have a certain pride about what you do, and it hurts not to see it on the bestseller list. So I said that from my next book, I was going to give it to her in paragraphs. So there'd be a lot of capital letters and a lot of periods, and maybe I'd get on the bestseller list. But actually, I'm very grateful. I published the first one myself because nobody would publish poetry. It's very hard to get it published, and... I guess I sold about 65,000 out of my basement, and suddenly Random House has taken the books over, and they've done a marvelous job on it. They really have.
Well, there's something between those covers, too.
Well, thank you.
You've done material for so many other people.
Well, naturally, Glenn Yarbrough comes to mind first, because Glenn has probably recorded more of my songs than almost anyone. Victor Moon's recorded songs of mine, Andy Williams, Chad and Jeremy, Demita Joe had a big hit with If You Go Away.
I just wonder if people know that Rod McCune has written some of these great songs... That are sung by, you know, the big stars.
Well, you know, oddly enough, a lot of my songs have never made number one on the hit parade, but they've been successful in other ways. A song like I've Been to Town has probably sold 3 or 4 million records because of the fact that it was on the back of Baby the Rain Must Fall. It was in an Eddie Arnold album. This artist did it, that artist did it. The World I Used to Know, every month there's another recording out there. There are 65 recordings on If You Go Away. So it's difficult if somebody says to me, what is your best-selling song? It's hard to say because I don't write the kind of songs that really reach number one on the hit parade. I write a more stable song as far as the long pole is concerned.
Rod McCune, thanks very much for coming by.
My pleasure indeed.
This is Dave Niles in San Francisco for Monitor.
Well, that's publishing's biggest success story of the moment, but Mr. McCune never read any of his poetry, did he? Well... Here is a sample of what Time magazine calls Edgar Guest with a twist of lemon. Listen, I don't apologize for being hard to know. I am what I am. Sulking will not change that. But apple pies and warm hands will help. One more, and this one with some echoes of the typical loneliness of big city living, perhaps. Once was a time in New York's jungle in a tree before I went into the world in search of other kinds of love. Nobody owned me but a cat named Sloopy. Looking back, perhaps she's been the only human thing that ever gave back love to me. Two examples of the poetry of Rod McCune, best-selling poet in America today.
Don't forget.
What?
To call your FTD florist today for Valentine's Day flowers.
When's Valentine's Day?
Just eat to money.
Thank you, gang. And just to give you one good reason why, there's another direct Winter Olympic report about 4 minutes from now here on the Monitor Beacon.
What's the shortest distance between two points of view? The answer, straight line. my early morning telephone show. So, if you have an opinion or question, call and add to the outgoing sound of the incoming calls on Straight Line, the Long John Neville telephone show, mornings, that's right, mornings from 5 to 6, right here on WNBC.
For thousands of physically handicapped children, shut-in children, a door has been opened into the normal world of childhood, of growing, learning. The door of the Development Training Center of the New York Philanthropic League is open to all handicapped children, no matter how severe their disability, no matter what their race or creed. The League's door is their door to the future. You can keep it open by your gift to a League volunteer.
At 19 minutes after the monitor hour, here's a new version of an old favorite. The Bob Crew generation, among which is a very short man with glasses and a beard named Lautrec. Another NBC Monitor Olympic Report, direct from Grenoble, France, brought to you by Lincoln Mercury, makers of better cars inspired by the Lincoln Continental. In 1 minute, a summary of today's events. First, this word.
In just 1 year, more people have switched to Mercury Cougar than any other car in its class. The Big Cat is a roaring success. Who else in its class has a flashing tail that points the direction you're turning? And it's standard. Headlamps that hide by day, shine by night. Standard. A big new V8 Growl. Standard. Bucket seats, floor shifts, full-width rear seat. All standard. In fact, Cougar's got more equipment that's standard than any other luxury sports car in its class. The only one built with the fine car touch. Inspired by Lincoln Continental. Now, there are twice as many Cougars to choose from. Mercury's got it. The Big Cat. A roaring success. Get it today at your Mercury dealers.
From Grenoble, France, this is Jim Simpson, along with Len Dillon for Monitor Sports, with a summary of today's events here at the 10th Winter Olympics. Jean-Claude Keeley was nearly perfect as he completed the first run of the Giant Slalom Alpine Ski event at 1 minute 42 and 74 hundredths seconds. And that's more than a second better than Willy Favre of Switzerland, who was in second place. Consider that Keeley won his first gold medal in the men's downhill by 0.08 of a second. You can better realize what a big lead Keeley has with his more than 1 second bulge over Favre. Most agree that unless Jean-Claude takes a disastrous spill in tomorrow's final run of the giant slalom, he is assured of his second gold medal. Jimmy Huga, who was a bronze medalist 4 years ago, was the top American finisher in seventh place, nearly 3 seconds back. Billy Kidd, with his injured ankle and now a bone bruise bothering him, is in eighth place. Spider Savage and Fred Jaffe are in 12th and 13th place. Injury and illness have plagued the American Alpine team, and listen to the latest. Little Kiki Cutter, who had the fastest time of any of the Americans in yesterday's downhill, has broken out in a rash. Bob Bianchi, the team coach, has hastened to advise it's not the measles. It seems that Kiki dated Patrick Tombe, a French skier, and he came down with the measles. Kiki immediately had a shot, and Bianchi, fingers crossed, said, no, we've lost skiers to injury, but we haven't lost Kiki Cutter to the measles. Meanwhile, America's top figure skating pair, Cynthia and Ronnie Coffman, got off to a shaky beginning as on three different occasions they moved into starting position only to have their skating music fail to play. Finally, they were told to skate off their tensions while adjustments were made. When the music did play for their compulsory figures, the Kaufmans were able to finish no better than fifth. The pre-Olympic favorites and defending pairs champions, Oleg and Ludmila Protopopov, have a huge lead, and after Tuesday night's free skating finals, they should have another gold medal. But it was not an entirely discouraging day for the American team. And with news on the brighter side, here is Len Dillon.
In the 1,000-meter speed skating competition, Diane Holum of the United States won a bronze medal today, finishing third behind Caroline Geisen of Holland and Ludmila Titova of Russia. Diane's third-place finish gave the United States its only medal of the day. However, believe it or not, the United States is second in medal standings with one gold, three silvers, and a bronze. Italy is first with two golds, and Norway third with one gold, two silvers, and a bronze. In the 70-meter ski jumping competition at Autrans, the best the United States could do was to place 33rd in a field of 58 jumpers. 27-year-old John Bolfance of Denver, a sales manager, said he did very badly. And in hockey, Jim, the U.S. took its fourth loss in a row, losing to Canada 3-2 in an afternoon game. The Canadians came from behind with two goals in the last period to snatch victory from defeat.
Thank you, Len Dillon. Now from Grenoble, France, Jim Simpson, Monitor Sports.
When we introduced our all-new Mercury Montego for 68, we told ourselves, this Mercury's got it. We thought it'd be the equal of any other luxury intermediate. Wrong. The Montego two-door hardtop, for example, is about half a foot more car than its three leading rivals. 4 inches more riding comfort in the wheelbase, 20% more usable trunk space. And Montego has a fine car touch, inspired by Lincoln Continental. So instead of making Mercury Montego equal to the competition, we wound up making it much more. Son of a gun.
Good. Comprehensive Olympic coverage is brought to you daily on NBC Radio and weekends on Monitor by Lincoln Mercury. For Mercury, Montego, and Cougar. Stay with NBC for Olympic coverage daily and weekends for this final week of the Winter Games.
Thank you.
Herb Alpert's Tijuana Brass and a familiar melody from an original idea by Prosper Mérimée. Monitor, original, stimulating, always current, and available on NBC stations throughout the nation. When you're near Omaha, Nebraska, you'll hear us on KFAB. The station bringing you Monitor where you are right now will identify itself next, and then we'll hustle back. This is Brad Crandall.
Second Sunday, Suffrage is Not Enough. The New Woman, a full-hour news special tonight on NBC Radio. Monitor, New York, your weekend sound on WNBC, New York.
Was it an accident or a murder? Peter Van Eyck stars in an alibi for death on the Sunday Film Festival tonight at 11:30.
That's tonight at 11:30 on Channel 4, New York.
Here's more Monitor music as Reuben Mitchell's orchestra plays The Fox. Star Monitor, a brand new one. Phil Harris sings, would you believe, a ballad, But I Loved You.
You were Boston, I was Vegas. I was by. You were lectures, I was moving. But I loved you. You were Mozart, I was Basie. Afternoon tea, I was saloon. You were Junior League, I was Dodger. But I loved you morning, night, and noon. Opposites attract, the wise men claim. Still, I wish that we had been a little more the same. It might have been a shorter walk. If I had kissed you more, you were polo, I was racetrack. You were museums, I was TV. You did your best to change me, though you never knew quite how. But I loved you almost as much as I do now.
Probes two totally different worlds this half hour. Later, the world of auto racing on Sport and Speed with Chris Economaki. 3 minutes from now, the world of ESP, extrasensory perception. Area of specific reference, the White House and the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. I said the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. The whole story right after a smooth takeoff with the high-flying Cowsills. Psychologist Hans Holzer does. In fact, he believes in the ghost of Abraham Lincoln, which he claims still resides in the White House. Sound fantastic? Well, maybe, but you've got to admit it's certainly an interesting theory. In point of fact, it's much more than just theory, as you'll begin to understand during the following chat with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley.
You have some interest in getting into the White House. For a specific reason. What is this interest and the reason for that?
Well, I have done some research on Abraham Lincoln, and there is some evidence that people have seen, allegedly, a ghost in the White House. Allegedly, that of Abraham Lincoln. Among the people who have had this experience, both visual and auditory, they've heard footsteps, knocks at the door of what used to be Lincoln's bedroom, shades of a figure. and so on, are the late Eleanor Roosevelt, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, the daughter of the present President of the United States, has had an experience with this kind, has spoken about it quite freely. Foreigners who have slept in this room have talked about it. All I want is to be able to spend a quiet half hour or so in Lincoln's bedroom and in the East Room without publicity, without fanfare, and without any form of notoriety, because I think Abraham Lincoln's story has not yet been told fully.
Well, what makes you think that you then will be able to tell the story fully?
I use a psychic. I don't do it. I'm an investigator. I take psychic people with me who are innocent of the case. That is to say, they don't know why they're there or where they are. I would simply say, come with me. I would like you to gather impressions. And then in the spot where an imprint of a past event might hang on, I will put them into a hypnotic trance in which their own personality is set aside, and whatever might then be present in the atmosphere would come through their unconscious minds, and I will speak to them directly and get information, such information as I can get. I've done this for 15 years with great success because I've been able to corroborate a lot of this evidence in the usual scientific fashion.
What would you ask this medium?
I would not ask anything. I would just sit there and listen and wait till someone came through who would be able to identify himself. I would then ask for complete proof of identity by having knowledge privy only to that person. If it were, let us say, Abraham Lincoln, he would have to have an awful lot of knowledge of Abraham Lincoln's past life, personal details, all of which I would then check out. And if some of it turns out to be unpublished and yet verifiable, I have a case.
Well, it seems to me then, Hans, that they would be very pleased to have you in the White House. Why have you not been able to do this?
I really don't know.
Have you asked?
I have asked the social secretaries who have, I think, turned it down on their own. I don't think Mrs. Johnson ever heard about this. If she hasn't, I'm sure that Mrs. Johnson would be very interested to see what can be done with ESP. There's nothing undignified about this work. There are many universities that are now delving into the frontiers of the human mind, and I think all we can do is learn about a very important part of history in our country's past. I already have done some investigating on the outskirts of Washington pertaining to this case, pertaining to the story of Mary Surratt, who was involved in the plot to kill Lincoln. And I have very serious reasons to say that there was a Norton plot to kill the president.
Was John Wilkes Booth a part of this plot?
Yes, but not of the Northern plot.
There not of the Northern plots. Plot?
There were two plots, and John Wilkes Booth was the one who did it, but he was not alone.
Well, why is it necessary to get into the White House to do this? Couldn't you do this elsewhere?
Because events leave an imprint, like a photograph, emotional events, in the spot where something terribly important has happened. Now, Lincoln's bedroom is where his home was, his heart was. If people have seen his ghost in that spot, it means that some part of him is still there, and it would have to be in that spot, the focal point of activities, where one would have to start.
Do you really, Hans Holzer, believe in ghosts?
I started as a total disbeliever when I was a journalist originally. I became an archaeologist and later a parapsychologist, and I was led to this the hard way, simply by the mountains of evidence that I had investigated myself and by the evidence that others, professors, teachers, had done. And unless I would be completely dishonest with myself, I couldn't reject this evidence, even though it went contrary to what I was taught as a child. And today I am firmly convinced, yes, man has a soul, a spirit, if you wish. It is an electric field in terms of science, but it does continue to exist after physical death.
We've been talking with Hans Holzer about his book, ESP and You, The Startling Facts About Precognition, Mediums, Ghosts, Psychic Healing, Telepathy, Reincarnation, and Witchcraft. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Well, what do you think? Fascinating subject, ESP, hypnosis, mediums, ghosts. Maybe there's such an interest in it lately because of the accent on materialism in our world today. At any rate, it'll be interesting to see if Mr. Holzer ever realizes his fondest dream to spend some time in the East Room of the White House, just listening and waiting. Meanwhile, we've been waiting for a new song from Claudine Langer, and here it is, Love is Blue.
Ma vie dans tes bras. Tout.
That was Claudine Longet, and it's our new version of Love is Blue. From new to new, as Monitor continues, 1 minute from now with a brand new song by a group called The Bulldog Breed. Stay right here and keep up with the world. And it is easy when you stay on the Monitor beacon.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York.
Every day is a special occasion on WNBC. And this is Big Wilson inviting you to rise to that occasion with me. The WNBC news staff and I will keep you in touch with what happened in and around New York while you were asleep. You keep in touch with me on Plaza 78866. Be a big listener and a big caller. Mornings from 6 to 9 on WNBC.
Your traffic department reminds you that winter driving conditions call for added driving caution, particularly in heavy holiday traffic. So remember to keep at least one car length behind the car you are following for every 10 miles an hour of your speed. When roads are wet or icy, give yourself an even greater margin of stopping safety by staying back a greater distance. Always stay alert to traffic conditions around you and avoid weaving in and out of lanes. You'll have a safer and pleasanter holiday trip.
Time check for Monitor? Certainly. It's now 13 minutes before the hour. And as promised, here's a new one from the Bulldog Breed.
If tears were roses, I'd have a big bouquet. Oh,
next on Monitor, Sport of Speed, featuring Chris Economaki. News, views, and results from the world of auto racing, one of America's biggest spectator sports. Here's Chris.
Before big crowds at the weekend IMCA big car events at the Florida State Fair in Tampa, Jerry Reichert won his second straight feature yesterday afternoon, trailed by Gus Linder of Pittsburgh, Jerry Lipinski of St. Paul, Minnesota, Bobby Adamson of Coriopolis, Pennsylvania, and Darrell Harrison of Tiffin, Ohio. Earl Hallequist, the United Racing Club champion of Sydney, New York, had a tough afternoon. First, the steering gear let go on his car, and then in the main event, he hit the wall, inflicting much damage to his title-winning machine, but fortunately escaped injury. In today's events, Reichert, forced into a backup car after failing to qualify his regular machine, almost made it three straight. Lying second behind Tampa's Bill Roynan, Reichert was forced to take evasive action halfway through the 30-lap feature when Roynan's car suddenly broke an axle. This allowed Adamson to zip from third place into the lead, which he held to the finish. Reichert took second, Ray Tilley of Clearfield, Pennsylvania, third, Ray Lee Goodwin of Kansas City, fourth, and Harold Leap of Wichita, Kansas, fifth. The IMCA big cars race again at Tampa on Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. On the other side of the world today, in Brisbane, Australia, Scotsman Jim Clark won round five in the Tasman Cup Series. He finished his Lotus Ford 8 seconds ahead of his teammate, Graham Hill of England, in the contest on the Surfers Paradise Road Circuit. And bucking gusty winds on the 2.5-mile Daytona International Speedway, Cale Yarborough of Timmonsville, South Carolina, today drove a 1968 Mercury Cyclone to the fastest official speed in the history of the track, 189.222 miles an hour. Yarborough won $5,000 and the choice of front row positions for the $200,000 Daytona 500 stock car race on February 25th. Second in today's two-lap trials, worth $1,000, went to national champion Richard Petty with a 189.055 mile an hour run in his new Plymouth Roadrunner. All in all, 11 of the 18 drivers who went against the clock today broke the qualifying mark of 180.831 miles an hour set by Curtis Turner last year in a Chevelle. Leroy Yarborough in a Mercury and David Pearson in a Ford Torino were third and fourth fastest. Yesterday, Pearson became the first over 190 mile an hour traveler in Daytona's history, but because of the high winds today, could not match that speed. Tiny London and Mercury and the Allison brothers, Bobby and Donnie and Ford Torinos, along with Al Unser in a Dodge Charger, Paul Goldsmith in a new Plymouth, Sam McQuag and Bobby Isaac in 1968 Dodge Chargers, all eclipsed the old record. Practice for the 500 continues all this week at the big speedway. And this is Chris Economaki for Monitor.
Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki, one of America's foremost authorities on auto racing, is heard every Saturday and Sunday coast to coast on Monitor. Be sure to hear Monitor's other auto racing feature, World of Wheels. A unique voice, a strong beat, and a happy attitude. Put them all together and it comes out Trini Lopez doing It's a Great Life.
It's a great life. You get the things you go after. Whole lot for good times and laughter. This is your chance, so go for today. It's a great life. Why don't you reach out and take it? Jump for the top and you'll make it. Stick with your dreams and you'll find your way. Straight ahead. Through 1,000 doors and straight ahead, the world can be yours. In this great life, you'll find in all of your seeking, love is the one thing worth keeping. Love will come if you've got love to life. You can live, you can live, you can live. It's a great life. Why don't you reach out and take it? Jump for the
top and you'll make it. Stick with your dreams and you'll find your way. Straight ahead, you'll go through 1,000 doors. And straight ahead, the world can be yours. In this great life, you'll find in all love you're seeking. Love is the one thing worth keeping. Love will come if you've got lots to give. Then a great life you can live, you can live. Then a great life you can live, you can live. Then a great life you can live, you can live, you can live. Oh, it's a great life.
Don't forget.
What?
To call your FTD florist today for Valentine's Day flowers.
When's Valentine's Day?
In research laboratories, a machine is used to test the tars and nicotine in various brands of cigarettes. It is called a smoking machine. In living rooms across the country, there is another kind of smoking machine.
Anybody got a cigarette?
The lungs and arteries of this smoking machine are also collecting tars and nicotine. The mechanical smoking machine will not get heart disease, lung cancer, or emphysema from smoking. Can this smoking machine...
Anybody got a cigarette?
...make the same claim? Get the facts from your heart association.
Its version of Duke Ellington's Immortal Caravan. Monitor's electronic caravan ceases at this point, but we cordially invite you to stay tuned for NBC Monitor News on the Hour, followed by another in the second Sunday series of radio specials from NBC News. Tonight's program, Suffrage is Not Enough, a study of America's new, more militant woman who seeks a more active role in local, national, and world affairs. So stay with us and stay informed and up to date on news and current events. This is Brad Crandall.
Keep to the latest news now, it's on the air. Keep to for sports and views now, from everywhere.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.
This is Sterling Yates. If you're a bargain hunter, you'll enjoy tracking down the quarry on my show and sell weekdays from 10 to 11 a.m. on WNBC. Now, whether you're in the market as a bear or a bull, you'll enjoy the trading on my show and sell. So listen and call mornings from 10 to 11. Anything's fair game.
For thousands of physically handicapped children, shut-in children, a door has been opened into the normal world of childhood, of doing, growing, learning. The door of the Development Training Center of the New York Philanthropic League is open to all handicapped children, no matter how severe their disability, no matter what their race or creed. The League's door is their door to the future. You can keep it open by your gift to a League volunteer. It's 9 o'clock.